division around this technology. I think a lot of women, not all, but a lot of women, just can't understand what's so impressive about a loud General Electric or Rolls-Royce engine at full throttle in takeoff. They just zone out. But I, as a grown-up boy, am pretty thrilled by it all. What thrills me is how careful thought by some boffin scientists in these large corporations can lead to a moment of a sheer display of strength, of power. I mean, that's really what it is. It's power. It's mankind creating a kind of roar and a sense of energy that has eluded humans for thousands of years. You know, thousands of years, it was the gods who made that sort of noise. But suddenly it's us. You know, it's just us taking off for New York. And it's impressive. Mm. It creates a feeling of technological awe.
The first thing a lot of us think about when we think about airports these days, sadly, is security. I don't think anybody actually enjoys the whole security process. You talked with some of the senior security officers at Heathrow. What did you learn from them?
Well, I began to sympathize a little bit with a job in which, in your professional career, you're unlikely ever to find the thing that you've been trained to find, or to deal with the situation you've been trained to deal with. So most security personnel will never meet a terrorist, will never find a bomb, you know, thank goodness, but they never will. And so they're always on the verge of, or often on the verge of, sort of not taking the threat as seriously as they might. So if you're the manager of the security personnel, you have to constantly awaken your staff to the sense of the dangers. So there were posters all over the kind of tea room showing, you know, well-known terrorists and blown up aeroplanes that had been a stark reminder of what terrorism could do. But then, you know, some chilling stories. I was joking with one of the people, why on earth do you x-ray pregnant women and little old ladies and harmless kids and all the rest of it? There's a famous story in aviation security, the Hindawi affair, where a Jordanian man incited his girlfriend, his pregnant girlfriend, pregnant by him, to board an El Al flight carrying what she didn't know, but what turned out to be a bomb in a plastic bag, so that she would blow herself, his unborn child, and, you know, 300 passengers up above Europe. Fortunately, she was caught at the very last minute, and this not very charming Jordanian man was arrested and still languishes in jail. But that was a reminder. It's after that incident that everyone, however friendly the granny looks, they will x-ray her to bits as well.
You spent a fair amount of time people watching during your week at Heathrow, too. Did you begin to kind of notice things about other travelers?
Yes. One of the great pleasures of airports is that you're allowed to stare at people while pretending to be merely reading your newspaper. So for the budding ethnographer, they're perfect places. By the time you're a writer in residence, you can actually ask people questions. So I asked a lot of people about why they were traveling, where. You know, the most amazing stories are there on a minute-by-minute basis. I remember a man stopping by and I said, you know, where are you going? He said, oh, I'm going to LA to see my family. I said, oh, right. What have you been doing in England? He goes, well, I've just been seeing my family. I said, with different branches. He goes, no, well, I've got two wives, he said. I said, oh, really? Do they know about each other? He said, no. I said, how many children do you have? He said, I've got six. I've got four in one place and two in another. I said, does this wear you down? He looked beaming and suntanned. He said, no, it's a little complicated, but it's fine. Of course, you know, one would never have guessed that. He seemed the most sort of respectable and ordinary of people. And the airport was just full of such stories.
Wow. As a writer, you must have just wanted to wander down the halls, spending, you know, eternity asking people questions.
Yes. I mean, it was almost daunting. There was too much. I felt like I had a teaspoon, you know, and I was trying to drink an ocean with it.
Near the end of your book, you write, travel agents would be wiser to ask us what we hope to change about our lives rather than simply where we wish to go. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think that travel, as religions have always known, is a transformative experience from an inner point of view. You know, if you think of the old religious tradition of going on a pilgrimage was a journey undertaken explicitly for therapeutic purposes, to get over something, to encourage you to be good, to evolve in some way. And I think we still use travel to some extent in that way sometimes, but perhaps shy about it. And it would sound rather odd if we went to a travel agent and said, you know, I'd like to go somewhere and say where, and, you know, I'd like to go somewhere to get over my love or to find a new direction. They think, oh, this is a very strange customer indeed. We're supposed to know where we want to go and what we want to do with that place. But I think choosing a travel destination is a psychological activity. And I think in an ideal world, a few